Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Theatrics is not a substitute for strategy. Zelensky's insulting letter to the Russian president is a reflection of the West's inability to negotiate in good faith. Also, Germany's denial of a seat on the United Nations Security Council demonstrates Berlin's fading importance in the world. This can also be said of Europe in general. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with Mark here. Let's comment on Zelensky's open letter to President Vladimir Putin during the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. Obviously, it was theatrics. It was full of emotion. Physical threats were made, predictions of inevitable defeat, and just a good feeling about being European and having the West backing. It had nothing to do about how to end this conflict, and there was no, to use a trite phrase, no win-win approach. So what was the whole point of the letter, Mark?
Provocation. That is exactly what it was. It was not at all intended to be a genuine peace gesture or even any type of attempt at initiating a return to diplomatic dialogue. Now, it is possible that the Trump administration may have pressured Zelensky to sending such a letter because Trump seems concerned at least about achieving a temporary ceasefire during the course of the U.S. midterm elections. I really don't know why. I don't have any understanding of why they believe a ceasefire in Ukraine would in any conceivable way affect the U.S. midterm elections. It doesn't even affect presidential elections. Americans don't vote on foreign policy and are barely even aware, for the most part, that anything is even happening in Ukraine at this point, particularly overshadowed events in the Gulf on top of everything else. But this letter was filled with an insult-ridden tirade that was, if anything, designed to provoke Russia and to distract attention away from Russia's St. Petersburg International Economic Forum to steal the limelight so that people were talking about this and these pinprick drone attacks out of NATO airspace. It was really an attempt to rain on Putin's parade and to humiliate him during the course, between that and the drone strikes, during the course of the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. And if only humiliation, at least as it's defined by the Western media, won wars, well, then the Kiev regime would already be marching well past the Urals. Unfortunately, it doesn't really do anything except provide them some backslapping self-satisfaction.
Yeah, George, I mean, I'm titling this program Insults is Strategy, and that's not going to go anywhere. I mean, I think we've all reflected quite a deal about how there was the Europeans were going to get some kind of European envoy. I thought that's what Kaya Kallas' job was, but that's a different topic for another time. And that's kind of faded away. And we all know why, because they don't know what to say other than unilateral surrender. That's their default position. Or even further, for some, if we look at some of the folks in the Baltic republics, the breakup of the Russian Federation. I mean, this has just gone, this is beyond reality. There can be a negotiated end here. It would be very difficult. But there's no will on the part of the Ukrainians for that because they're payrolled. Zelensky and his crowd continue to be payrolled. Why would they want to change that? And the Europeans don't have an alternative towards unconditional surrender. I mean, after all of what has happened, all the death on the battlefield, all the money spent, they still don't have a strategy. George.
No, there's no strategy other than, well, let's continue with the war. And that's the goal, that they should just go on with the war, that this will weaken and eventually destroy Russia. That's the goal. They think that we can just keep hitting them, and at some point Russia will collapse. That's more or less their strategy. And, you know, they get, you know, occasional boost in their standing. I mean, for instance, the regime change in Hungary has kind of given the NATO gang a boost. You know, the new government has now lifted its veto on the so-called European Peace Facility, whereby Europeans are reimbursed for the money that they sent to Ukraine. And now Hungary has withdrawn its objections to Ukraine's induction, in principle induction, into the EU. So their goal is just to keep this going. And so, and Mark is absolutely right about the whole purpose of the Zelensky letter. Of course, it was an insult and was taken to be an insult. And I think Putin, during the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, said, well, was the goal of this letter to ensure that there are no negotiations? I believe that that was the goal of the letter. The letter was so insulting that who is going to sit down and talk to somebody who has openly and personally insulted you? And that's what his handlers, and I think it was more his European handlers wanted from him. So yes, go ahead, insult Putin, and then the media dutifully reported, Zelensky made a peace offer and Putin slapped down this peace offer. And as a result of that, the St. Petersburg was subjected to Ukrainian attacks as if this was the appropriate punishment for Russia for failing to accept Zelensky's peace offer. So yes, absolutely. The goal is just let's keep this war going. Let's keep the show on the road for a little longer.
Yeah, and Mark, the war does continue, and the fronts are expanding. I mean, we've talked on this program about the Baltic states allowing their airspace to be used for drone and missile attacks from Ukraine. Maybe as we move forward, even from the soil of one or all three of those sovereign states. And then we have the whole Romania front opening up. Very interesting. Probably the most pliant and fearful leader in the European Union is the Romanian president because, well, he's not really president, but again, another topic for another program. And then we have Greece looks like is being pulled into all of this here. This is not only was the letter insulting, but the policy is provocative. They want Russia to respond harshly against Ukraine. I mean, get your head around that. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, because they can't buttress the Kiev regime to hold on the battlefield, and then whatever they might claim to the contrary, Russia is moving at an accelerated pace for the course of this conflict all along the contact line. And they're ignoring what is happening in Konstantinovka and Rye Alexandrovka and the outskirts of Orehov. They just don't talk about it. What they talk about is a long-range Hail Mary drone strike campaign that is really pinprick damage, right? It is more psychological and PR. Bloomberg just reported this week that Russia's year-year oil energy profits is up 32%. I mean, how can you say that they're in any way affected? The Wall Street Journal says the Kiev regime is attacking Russia's energy infrastructure, but struggling to dent Russia's economy because Russia's spare capacity, regenerative capacity, and just the behemoth of energy production that it is, they don't approach a scale that does any significant damage. So it's mostly PR. Now, if there is any fault for we had a kind of a week off after Russia used electronic warfare to spoof a couple of Ukrainian drones down into Latvia. Then they restarted again for the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. Well, if there's any fault, that's on the Russian military or the Russian government for not choosing to take a strong enough stand to deter the Baltics from doing so. Now, if they don't, that means they're willing to accept that damage. And if they're willing to accept those, you know, PR humiliations and so forth, then that's fine because they're willing to accept it. If not, then they've got to take stronger action to deter the Europeans from, you know, becoming you know, what they are is participants in this conflict. And the maritime drone incidences in Romania and Greece are similar. The Kiev regime lost control of several maritime drones, possibly again through the use of Russian electronic warfare. And one of them ended up on the shores of a Greek island a couple of weeks ago. And now four of them ended up, obviously, some kind of wolf pack that was lying in wait and they lost control of and drifted into Constanta Harbor in Romania and one by one detonated, blew up, creating, you know, quite a furor in Romania. But considering Romania is intimately involved in the construction and launching of those very maritime drones for the Kiev regime, Crimea River, you know, just desserts.
Well, yeah, but I see that, you know, we all through the conflict, we've talked about who has escalation dominance and how to react to it. George, I mean, I just can't help but feel there's an inevitability here where the Russians are being poked enough that they're going to start hitting missiles over NATO airspace. And we'll see what happens. I mean, I don't think the United States is going to come in and agree to an Article 5 when it was the Europeans that were provoking. But who knows? Donald Trump needs a win. Everybody knows that. George.
Well, I think so. But you have to think about, I think this war is going to go on for quite some time. And that's another aspect of the Zelensky letter and the NATO declarations, with particularly with Mark Rutte, who visited Ukraine last week and declared, contrary to NATO's claims, that Ukraine's path to NATO is set in stone. This is always very strange. NATO, on the one hand, says, how ridiculous the notion that Ukraine will ever be a member of NATO. No one ever had any plans to bring Ukraine into NATO. And at the same time, Rutte says it's set in stone. So this is their indication that they intend to keep this war going. So for whatever defeats that they suffer, whatever, you know, Russia takes the entirety of the Donbass, Russia takes Kherson, Zaporozhye, the war continues. And that's the message that they want to convey. This war, we will continue against you. And the fact is that what's happened in Romania is indicative that these satellite states, because these are essentially satellite states, now are completely unable even to raise objections and say, hey, this war is an absolute catastrophe for us, because now we are daily subjected to drones.
Yeah, because
drone from Russia with a drone from Ukraine, we now are regularly subjected to drones. But this president, this so-called president of Romania, he knows that he owes his job to the EU, and so he doesn't dare to raise any kind of objections. And this is going to go on throughout Europe. That, you know, again and again, they will be subjected to these drone attacks. And if anyone says anything adverse, you say, well, it's all Russia's fault. Doesn't matter. Everything is Russia's fault. So this is now daily life in Europe.
Yes.
Routine attacks by drones.
Meaning the European countries, EU countries, are going to be touched by this. We'll see what their tolerance level is for all of this. But that remains to be seen. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here, and we're going to go to do a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. I want to talk about a new topic here. Mark, much to the chagrin of Germany, they didn't get a seat on the United Nations Security Council. Annalena Baerbock, the president of the General Assembly, before she became president of the General Assembly, I didn't even know there was a president of the General Assembly, probably the least deserving people ever to get that position. But she had to announce the General Assembly's vote that Germany was not wanted, okay? Now, I don't really want to pick on Germany particular here. I mean, we have many other opportunities to do that with the current chancellor, the second worst chancellor in the history of Germany. But I want to talk about the symbolism of it, perceptions. At the end of the day, Germany doesn't count much as much as it used to. And I want to go further Europe doesn't count. They think they're very, very important. They think they're the center of everything and that they have some kind of moral right, some kind of mandate from heaven, even though it's a completely secular anti-Christian society. They have this mandate to call the shots all around the world. This vote in the General Assembly says the world doesn't agree. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, if you listen to the Germans, it's all Russia's fault. Because it's Russia's fault. It has nothing to do with Merz's foreign policy, his support of Israel, his militarist rhetoric, his unpopularity in his own country. It's all Russia's fault that Germany lost that vote. And they were up for a rotating non-permanent member of the Security Council. They have held this position many times over the years. Yep. They have never lost the vote before because usually they laid the political groundwork well ahead of time to make sure that they didn't face any significant challenges. They reached out to other Western European countries and so forth, and they didn't bother to do this time. The mood in the global South against Merz is not popular. So they suffered the fruit of their own rewards. And yet this is a big shock to Germany because actually they believe that they deserve a permanent seat of their own on the National Security Council. And this was a big shock, the fact that they lost their vote. Why they think that? I mean, the reality is that, yes, Africa deserves a vote. The Middle East deserves a vote. South America deserves a vote. The Middle East, but India does. But Germany, if anything, Europe should be reduced down to one permanent vote on the Security Council.
Well, I mean, why can't the countries that comprise of the European Union decide on what country will represent them on the Security Council? I mean, why can't they have that rotating? Okay, I mean, percentage of world population only continues to decline, and you know the argument that India and South Africa should be on the Security Council. I mean, there are infinite number of reasons why they should be. I mean, Nigeria representing Africa. I mean, again, why do the Europeans have this coveted, God-given reason that they have to be on the Security Council?
Well, it's an accident.
I'm being
it's an accidental consequence of World War II, whereby Great Britain and France became permanent members of the UN Security Council, so they will be there in perpetuity. And then, of course, with the United States, that means NATO is represented by three of the five permanent members. So if you bring Germany on board, then it'll be four out of six. And there's no way at all that Russia or China is going to put up with it. So Germany's campaign, this long-standing campaign that they deserve this being a permanent member, is ridiculous, and it will never succeed. But it is, I think it is a measure of the decline in the prestige of Germany to have failed, because this was a big defeat. This was the scale of the defeat. This was a landslide. When Annalena Baerbock read out the results, Portugal and Austria easily, overwhelmingly defeated Germany. So this wasn't a close race. And, you know, when you think back, you know, just a few decades, Germany had an enormous international prestige. Willy Brandt won the Nobel Peace Prize. And the peace policy that Germany pursued from, you know, the late 1960s on through to the end of the Cold War enjoyed great prestige around the world because they thought, hey, Germany has really made amends for what it had done. It has really gone the extra mile to develop peaceful relations with its neighbors. It said, you know, it's made clear that it doesn't want to go back to the bad old days. And so Germany really enjoyed a very high international reputation. Germany has squandered that. I mean, squandered it obviously in its policies in Europe, its very warlike policies against Russia, pursuing very much the same policies as Hitler had done. To the rest of the world, it looks very similar. And of course, it has underwritten Israel, and underwritten it for many, many years. And everybody knows this, that Germany has been one of, you know, next to the United States, has been one of the most important underwriters for Israel. And the Palestinians in particular have suffered the consequences of Germany's guilt over World War II. So they were punished for something that they hadn't done. Even had the World War II and what happened to the Jews in Europe had nothing to do with the Palestinians. So the Germans, it's the one people that Germany feels any kind of guilt or responsibility for. Germany has no feelings of guilt or about what it did in the Soviet Union. It never says anything about that. No, they don't deserve anything except Israel. And I think the rest of the world is just absolutely sick of this.
Yeah, Mark, again, Germany finds itself on the wrong side of history, and it's a cell phone, Mark.
Yeah, imagine this. The rest of the world, the global South, appreciated and rewarded a Germany that was committed to being a peaceful country and international peace, and it does not appreciate and seeks to punish a Germany that has returned to at least militarist rhetoric and the support of Israel. Shocker. I mean, who would have imagined this? But even that their attempt at returning to militarism is a further sign of their degradation as an economic and industrial power, because despite all the rhetoric and the money that they're throwing at it, they're not achieving anything. It's more humiliation for Germany. There was another internal report in Germany out this week assessing the capabilities, such as it is, of the German military. Remember, Merz is insisting that he's going to make Germany the most powerful military in the continent again, right? And yet their own internal assessment is that German military vehicles, there is such a shortage of repair and maintenance parts for Germans, Marder vehicles, you know, all of their general APCs, tanks, and so forth, that they're facing only 30% combat capable of their military vehicles. And that's nothing new. That's been going on for years. So even the militarist rhetoric fails projecting any type of success of Germany. It's a reflection of their industrial, their economic, and their political decline. Merz is just reaping humiliation after humiliation on Germany. It's almost to Simpsons mean, stop, he's had enough already.
Yeah, and we all have to remember, George, is that Ursula von der Leyen, she was defense minister for Germany, and she had no love for it whatsoever. I'm trying to remember the phrase, but she just it was benign neglect. And now Merz has to deal with the mess that she left behind. She just moved that mess to Brussels and continues to reproduce the same kind of incompetence that she did when she was in German politics.
Yes, indeed. She's the classic case of failing upwards. I mean, she was an absolute disaster as a defense minister. And then, of course, she was also a complete disaster as health minister.
I think
she was
Baerbock. Health minister
before. Yeah, that's right. And then, but she enjoyed the support of Angela Merkel. No, we don't quite know why, but Angela Merkel seemed to really like her. And Angela Merkel pushed her into this position. And here she can absolutely let rip with all her tyranny and her suppression of any speech that she doesn't like in Europe. Mark is right. I mean, the decline in German, Germany's reputation, even as an industrial power, has contributed to this dismal vote. Because there was a time, at least, when, you know, yeah, Germany is not a war-making machine anymore, you know, Wehrmacht's gone, but its manufactured goods had an enormous prestige around the world. Everyone thought of BMW, Mercedes-Benz.
That's because they had access to cheap Russian energy, right?
That's right. That's all gone, and so yeah, then their goods are now, you know, they're not as competitive as they once were. You know, and nobody even regards them, reveres them as they once did, and so it was essentially now Germany, in particular, in this has pursued this pathetic policy when it was Israel, because he knew that its bid to get onto that UN Security Council was in trouble. And so having first intervened on Israel's behalf in the genocide lawsuit at the ICJ, Germany then withdrew belatedly, thinking, well, this will add to us. And then, of course, they also said, well, we're not delivering weapons. We're gonna hold off on delivering weapons to Israel. Then, of course, they changed their mind and delivered them again. But this was, it only made Germany seem that much more pathetic, that they pursue one policy and they realize that they're in trouble. They reverse, and then they reverse that reversal. It's just adding to the dismal image that people have now of Germany.
Yeah, well, there's no moral underpinning of their position. It's extremely pragmatic and duplicitous, I would say. Mark, 1 minute left here. So goes Germany, so goes Europe.
Yes, exactly. And if we zoom back big picture, this isn't really just a moment of Germany's decline and humiliation. It is European. They haven't come to grips with their reduced economic, political, and military force in the world. And this is a direct result of the supremacist, messianic ideology of Western exceptionalism, that they really believe that they are structurally, societally, and above all, morally superior to the rest of the world, and they have a right to lead it. The rest of the world just no longer agrees.
Yeah, it's kind of like the final fall of Rome, but you could still come out in your toga and say, but I'm still Roman, but there's nothing left, okay? And they let it collapse through their own neglect and incompetence, and that's what we have here. Gentlemen, I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow, and of course I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.